All right, everybody. Welcome back to Tech Gumbo. My name is Haggai Davis III, and I'm here with Haggai Davis II. Our show is conversational. We talk about the past, present, and future of all things technology. We try to keep it interesting, topical, and digestible. Every week, we like to start off with a listener question. So you can always ask us questions on Twitter at Tech Gumbo Show or text us at 225-255-0431. The question this week related to user data. You know, we on Tech Gumbo talk about different things that apps collect. And, you know, the running joke is that they know more about you than you do. So someone wanted to know, what do they actually know? What are they actually collecting?
Well, the easy answer is everything. But to break it down a little further, we went into the T's and C's and terms and conditions. We found an article that broke it all down. There are 81 categories of data that Facebook collects about you.
Just from your mobile phone, not even from the desktop.
And of that 81 categories, 40 of the 81 categories ended with other data and other data.
Yeah.
So as to give you an example, the first category that Facebook lists is other data.
Which is not a great start because they have 40 categories where they list things out and they have another 40 categories that are just more vague data. Whatever they want it to be, however they want to categorize it, it's just more.
So they keep your physical address, your email address, your name, your phone number, your user ID, your device ID, and then they get to third-party advertising.
Any purchase history, financial info, your physical location, photos or videos, your search history, your browsing history, if the app crashes, your health data, your fitness data. Anything that your phone generates, they're keeping track of it.
And then when they get into the developers and with the developer advertising and marketing, your purchases, the financial information, where you were when you made those purchases, the, you know, again, your physical address, your name, your phone number, and then other user contact info, just in case there's other information, they get that as well.
There's a whole category just called sensitive info. Not really sure what that is, but something that you are probably hesitant about releasing to the world, Facebook's collecting it. Whenever you get into personalization, you see a lot of these same things pop up again. Whenever you get into app functionality, you see a lot of these same things pop again. Emails or text messages. Those are things that aren't generated or sent across Facebook, but they're still looking at them. Audio data, customer support, other user content, anything that is done on your phone that you do not specifically tell Facebook to not look at, Facebook is looking at.
There's a whole nother category just called other purposes, where they keep your purchase history and your financial info and the location you were when you made those purchases. And just, you know, were you doing it in the middle of a game? Were you doing, you know, what kind of photos and videos were part of that purchase? Were you using a browser? And what browser history were you doing?
Was it at certain times of day? Was it at certain physical locations? Does the time of day and the physical location correlate in some way? Just all of these different pieces of data they collect and they start adding them together and you have, you know, three or four different things that line up and you get a very powerful picture. And Facebook's collecting 80 streams of data. So that just goes to show you how much that this is just Facebook. This isn't Google, this isn't Snapchat, this isn't YouTube or any of the other ones. This is just what Facebook tells you that they're collecting. And Facebook has maybe once or twice in the past accidentally collected some other stuff that they weren't supposed to or weren't telling their customers about.
That would fall in the other info, the other data, the other user contact info, the other user content. The word other, when other is the lead word in a category, that should scare the crap out of you.
Yeah, this is them patting themselves in so many different legal places to where that if you say, hey, I didn't know you were taking that, and they said, oh, we actually didn't know either, but we had it and then decided to make money off of it. That is what they are doing here, and it is not great.
No, it's not. And speaking of not great, Parler was not a great thing.
So Parler, I think we talked a little bit about it, was conceived as a social media platform similar to Twitter, but there would be much less moderation. That had its own problems, but specifically today, we're here to talk about the security issues that Parler had.
Yes, we're not going to, you know, this isn't a show bashing Parler and the conservative ideas and content that people were posting. This is more about the dangerous nature of what Parler was, because number one, apparently there was zero security on the platform, so that even those people who had their verified accounts, that you had to use your social security number and some other specific content information about you, that information was not protected. And now it's floating around out there for sale.
Your social security number and your driver's license. If you wanted to get the Parler version of the blue check mark next to your name, you had to give them two very specific, very identifiable pieces of information. And because Parler's internal security was so poor, it's not that Parler is collecting it. It is now leaked out, and it's just it has hit the dark web, and it has hit the FBI. The FBI now has all this information, is looking through it. And this raises some questions.
Yes, the police department and the FBI and the secret security, they are all very, very happy with Parler, because everybody who was posting stuff about, you know, how they were going to do these horrendous things, or the people who posted stuff while they were doing them in the Capitol, they basically were telling on themselves on video, and now the authorities have all of that information.
Yeah. So there was 70 terabytes represented all of Parler users' messages, posts, videos, and pretty much anything they ever created. And it was all able to be scraped and downloaded. And so now groups of people have everything that was ever on Parler and are just releasing it slowly over time, including things like location history. There's now the location history of anybody who was on January 6th inside the Capitol who wasn't supposed to be there. And so, you know, it's good that we're going to be able to hold these people accountable, but the bad news is that this is a huge data and privacy breach.
So when right before Amazon Web Service or AWS was going to shut the whole Parler system down, this hacker at DONK_ENBY decided, let me go take a look and see if I can't find some of this information myself. And apparently he looked at the username and password and saw it was about as difficult to crack through as a Kleenex, and found himself on the servers inside of AWS, and he copied the 70 terabytes before AWS could shut him down. And so now he's taking the 70 terabytes and he's putting it out there, all of this information.
Yeah, it is the raw, unprocessed, just here. anybody who wants to go look at the entire history of Parler, anything that was ever on Parler, go ahead. It is yours for the viewing. And this is, it's something that I am for these people. You know, you should not be able to storm the Capitol. You should be held accountable for storming the Capitol and all the other things that happened. But man, you know, big tech should be, you know, written better than a college term project. This was so poorly done, so poorly coded, so poorly designed. It's kind of scary.
The fact that, you know, Parler said they had over 10 million users, which whether or not they did or not, even if it was within 10% of that, okay, that's still millions and millions of people who had signed on to this service. And, you know, you should have some reasonable level of security that the things you're going to post are, you know, protected. At least the information about you is protected. Yeah, your information, whatever you post, the same way with on Facebook or Twitter or any of that those platforms, when you put it out there, it's there for everyone to see. But they can't see you. They can't see your username. They can't see your username and password. They can't see your user locations. All of that information is now available for everybody who was using Parler.
And it's also whenever you post something, you know, I can go back and search every post on Facebook. One, that's really difficult to do because there's just been so many posts on Facebook. But Facebook intentionally prevents you from doing what's called scraping it, which is collecting large amounts of Facebook data at once. They want you to have to go through them and ask them. And Facebook wants to be able to decide how much you get to pull down. So the fact that this person was able to collect all of Parler and dump all of Parler out there onto the web, this has a lot of implications to it, because as you said, there should be some trust. We should be able to have some level of trust that the app that I'm using, you know, the data is only going to go where I expect it to go, where I think it goes, where it makes sense for it to go. And it looks like Parler might just be about to collapse as an entity entirely. But if it wasn't, there doesn't seem to be any way to hold companies like this accountable. If I was some person who was not part of the mob, if I was just a random Joe conservative on the street who was using Parler and my data was leaked, I'd be pretty upset and I'd want to hold someone accountable. I want to say, hey, Parler, why didn't you do a better job of protecting me? And there's no real way to do anything about that because of Section 230.
Well, it also brings up a question of ethics. Even though the stated purpose of the data scrape was to keep proof of those who were wrongdoing, the question remains, do the ends justify the means?
Yeah, and that's what we've been talking about here, is that, okay, you know, we are, you know, going after some people who did some pretty heinous things.
Horrible things. I mean, the lowest of the low kind of things, and threatening, and people who were threatening to do vile, harmful, there was threats of murder, you know, of people who were posting these kinds of things, because Section 230 provided those kinds of, you know, levels of security or insulation rather. And, but is it really, this is where we struggle, because yes, now we're going to be able to get all the bad guys because of the things they posted.
We have to make sure that we as the good guys follow a set of rules, that we do place some limitations on ourselves so that we protect other good guys, because not everyone who was on Parler was a bad person. There were a lot of totally fine, totally normal people on Parler, and it sucks for them that everything that they did is now exposed to the internet. That's
it's certainly not going to be decided on this show. It's for legal minds. Will any of that data be, will it hold up in court?
that'll be really curious to see. I don't know. That's a complicated question.
It really is, because, you know, when so much of this data has been archived and sold out there on the black web, I mean, and look, we're talking so much of what was posted, all of your exact GPS coordinates, the things that you said are posted on that are tied now back to you and your account. And it's troubling to me that what if somebody hacked into Facebook or to Twitter the same way? Would we feel, oh, well, Twitter was trying to be good guys, they weren't trying to be bad guys? How is that different?
Yeah, that's the, you know, someone compared it to the Ashley Madison debate, that this is a group of people who were not especially sympathetic towards because they were doing some things that they really, really should not have been. But, you know, there have to be rules in place. There has to be something where we say, okay, we're not simply going to pursue winning at all costs. There has to be something where we say privacy is important, security is important, you know, due process is important. And this really kind of plays with that, you know, as an example of, we have to actually not just have some hypothetical debate about what we value, but, you know, whenever the rubber meets the road, what happens functionally?
So when Parler was encouraging violence, or post rather than when post on Parler was encouraging violence, when you had people for days leading up to this January 6th event, that people were posting, they were going for trouble. Whether Donald Trump stood there and said, we're going to go march to the, whether anybody was incited by that or not, that's not for me to decide. I think a lot of people were going with the intent to do this one way or another, and they just used Donald Trump as the cover. Oh, look, the president told us to go do this. We're going to go storm the Hill now. And you're starting to see more and more content come out that people were bringing weapons, big weapons, and dangerous weapons.
It was planned and it was organized through Parler, that these people were in communication, that it was things which Facebook should have caught, Twitter should have caught, or Twitter or Facebook would have caught. They would have flagged these things and they would have been removed. But because Parler was very specifically not into moderation, these things were allowed to continue through. And you really have to wonder if Parler had just filtered the bottom, the very, very bottom, and left anything above that, you know, do things work out a little bit better?
But did Parler have the infrastructure capabilities to even do that? Where you've got 200,000 people working for Google and, you know, 25,000 people working at Twitter and however many hundreds of thousands working at Facebook to go and to build systems to look for that. It sounds like Parler had six guys in a couple of cans of Coke that were just in a basement somewhere throwing something out.
Yeah, the fact that the entirety of Parler ever was only 70 terabytes, that kind of speaks to how small that it was. And I agree that, you know, they weren't big enough. They didn't have the resources. They didn't have the infrastructure. But also, it kind of seems that from a design philosophy, they didn't want to. Whether or not they could, they very probably could not, but it seems like they didn't even want to. That wasn't their goal, or it was specifically their goal not to.
It exploded so fast. I mean, I'm not sure exactly when it started, but it's only been a few months old, and to have it explode overnight, there's no way that you could have the brain trust, the power, the manpower to be ready. And then when you had some nefarious people get on there and start saying some bad things, it would have taken a lot to be able to go back and find that. And the best thing in the world to have done was to shut it down.
Yeah. It's really, it's like when the stock market pauses trading because everything's collapsing. You just got to halt. You got to, you know, take some time to take everything apart and look at it. And then, you know, in a couple of days, couple of weeks, couple of months, you say, okay, now that the fires have subsided a little bit, what is salvageable? You know, what are things that can be fixed on this? But yeah, the brakes needed to be applied because it was just getting dangerous. It was already dangerous. It was getting more dangerous.
It was so worse than the Wild Wild West, because in the Wild Wild West, they only had six shooters. They didn't have, you know, AK-47s and pipe bombs and other things. And I'm just glad they shut it down and that the authorities are dealing with it.
Right. That is the one biggest takeaway, is that it could have been much, much worse, and it wasn't. And so I'm thankful for that. I'm grateful for that. And if you enjoyed our conversation today, if you think it's important, we are here every Saturday at 4 p.m. on Talk 107.3 FM, and the show reruns Sundays at 4 p.m. You can check out our show in the podcast section of talk107.3.com and the blogs and on-demand tab. Previous versions of our show are also available as older episodes on pretty much every podcast platform, including iTunes, Spotify, Podbean, Google Music, Deezer, Last.fm, Audio Music, Audible, and more.
We also want to thank EMCO Technologies for sponsoring our show. EMCO for all your business computer network needs, whether it's Office 365, cybersecurity concerns, moving to the cloud, or managing your business computer network. It's what we do. So give us a call at 225-925-8900 or find us on the web, emcotechnologies.com. And if you like our show and you want to give us some suggestions, we're on Twitter and we're on Facebook at Tech Gumbo Show. Or you can text us at 225-255-0431. You're listening to Tech Gumbo on Talk 107.3 FM, WBRP, Baton Rouge's new flavor of talk.